Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
Having trouble finding affordable, fresh baked goods and coffee? Come down to Agora Cafe, located in the McMillan Building at UBC. There's also space available to study.
Compassion, tolerance, and empathy. 'Cause we all experience pain, yeah, yes, we do. And we all feel the strains. So everybody, won't you come along and rest your weary bones upon my soul symphony.
this is my soul symphony.
And good evening and welcome to another African Rhythms here on CITR 101.9 FM UBC Radio, CITR.ca. We're starting out with the incredibly talented and modern day singer Jared Lawson. This is a singer that got his exposure in the UK, even though he's from Portland, Oregon. And I'm David Love Jones, and guess what? We've got Mike and Jason Hoover back for another show. Welcome, gentlemen.
Evening, David. Good evening, Vancouver.
Yes. It's good to have this man in Vancouver. David Love Jones, man. You're too much. I really appreciate
Jason. It's good to have you in Vancouver, too.
Oh, wow. I just appreciate you so much for exposure. Giving me great exposure at this time in my life. And I appreciate it very much, man.
No problem at all. Well, my cohort here, Michael Ingram, is a big part of this. And we've been doing radio going back to the mid-90s. So we've got a major history here.
Yes, 97. That's 20 years. Yeah. I didn't realize that, bro. Yeah.
I'm thankful that I managed to revive some of those shows and save the cassettes of them because there were some really special moments in those days.
No question.
Yeah, but, you know, we're working towards our first special moment, and we're talking about, yes, more than radio, we are undertaking making the first David Love Jones production, because the film company doesn't have a name yet. But David's first film is on the way.
Yes.
And it's about this gentleman here, Jason Hoover, and Michael, also helping me with the script, and he is going to be the primo narrator in this film, I think, would be just, right, Jason?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that Michael's got the right angle on your story. What do you think?
I think so. And you used to tell me about that three years, David, that it's been in the works. And you told me about this guy. I'd be on your case. I said, David, when are we going to do this project and get it finished?
So you heard about Mike before you saw him. You met him.
He met me. He didn't say a thing, man. We were doing that production in your studio.
Yeah.
And he was sitting in the back, you know, listening and watching, as a producer would do. It scared me. I didn't know if he was a producer or whatever. Because the producers don't say nothing but talk to the person like you. And that's all you did was talk to him. Yeah. I thought, well, geez, this is going to be heavy because David is serious. You know?
Yeah.
Well, and you used to tell me, I said, listen, when are we going to do this project, David? You said, when my man comes to town, he'll be in. He'll be in.
Mike's the best co-host of this radio show that's ever been. So, you know, when you come across that kind of talent, you don't forget it easily, you know?
Man, you have to work at it, man. Yeah. I mean, you have to be there. You have to actually live it.
Well, you know, part of my dream, though, you know, is to convert Michael's talents into a film. Because, not only does he have a great voice, but presented in the right way, I think Mike can be a pretty awesome actor himself.
You know? I think so. I think he's got
natural talent.
First of all, you have to have the personality.
Yeah.
And this man is personality plus.
Now, y'all realize, as dark as I am, I'm going to end up blushing and looking like a black cherry in here. So y'all need to stop on it.
I'll eat you. I
ain't know it's that kind of party.
All right. Well, tonight we are going to review further Jason's career, including his Mushroom album. But next, before that, I want to impress these two gentlemen with the depth of my soul music. And we know how we've got to have a certain amount of ladies playing on this show, because female content is very important. FemCon, as it's called. So next is going to be the gigantic talent. Now, Alice Clark She only made one album. Then she had her family, children, and she went back to her regular life and was never to make a record again. And this talent is humongous, even when you talk about people like Aretha
Chaka
and Linda Jones. Mm. So let's check her out next.
Mm-hmm.
Alice Clark here on African Rhythms. Keep it here.
requesting you, and I'm asking to give a love. Unity, unity, the secret to our freedom. Let's open our hearts and feel the feeling of happiness. Now we have the chance, the golden chance, to finally undo separation.
Jason, that is Creative Arts Ensemble and some fantastic, I would guess, Mike, possibly out of Chicago, somewhere like that.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of progressive kind of jazz with jazz vocal. You know.
Interesting stuff here. It's a compilation of a group
of
bands.
Jeremy
artists.
Underground is the guy who put it together.
Yeah, he said he did this basically out of the Isle of Wight Festival that they had in UK. But, you know, more often than not, Great Britain gets a lot or deserves the credit they do for keeping soul alive, because you never would have seen half these performers even have a career were it not for how that whole rock and soul
I'd say
thing
we're talking ran. Unknowns largely.
Yeah, no question.
I mean, it just shows you there's a lot of amazing unknown music out there and quality jazz vocal.
There were some interesting people on here, though, David. You had Gene Page producing a couple of these tracks. Mm. This group, they really don't say anything much about, but clearly there was some really good stuff. That reminded me of the Strata East stuff that used to come out of Chicago.
One of the members is Henry Franklin, who was on Black Jazz, and that was an underground jazz label. So this seems to be another band that came forth, but was largely overlooked, even within jazz circles, because let's face it, in jazz at that time in the 70s, a lot of snobbery between critics as to what was real jazz or not.
You got to remember that was the fusion era, so people were questioning authenticity. You know, guys were playing things that weren't considered pure jazz, and the jazz people were mad enough because a lot of their stuff wasn't getting played on the radio in the first place. So to have all of this come out in different formats, like smooth jazz is an oxymoron. It's jazz is always smooth. The artists and the musicians are always smooth. The fact that they would say something like this is just ridiculous, because you have to have a mastery of the instrument, whether it's playing something or singing something, to even be qualified to sing jazz. Jazz is like upper echelon stuff. You just don't coming out of somewhere and thinking you're going to sing jazz.
It's like classical music.
Exactly. It is. It's American classical.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, the next artist we're going to listen to, Jason, I know that's somebody that you've heard before and can identify with. And that's a gentleman named Leroy Hudson.
How did you know? That was my favorite, man. Leroy, he knocked everybody out. I mean, Hudson was big for only 2 years, maybe, but he had
He didn't really have a hit.
No.
I mean, he was a little bit overlooked because of, I mean, he was on Curtis Mayfield's label, but I heard, and Mike's mentioned this before, of potentially there was some kind of a conflict between Curtis and himself.
Always the artistic thing gets in the way. When you have creative people It's bound to happen from time to time. But you're right, Jason. In that time frame, Leroy Hudson was kind of like Norman Conners. He was one of those that allowed other people to be successful through his production work.
Yes.
And when he really did his own thing, like when he was in the disco era doing that Spirit of 76 stuff,
yeah, that's,
you know,
it.
That was his shot. But for the most part, he'd rather be behind the...
He tried to get into that disco vibe. Exactly. Or, well, he was forced to, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, but no, back in his golden era, like Hudson 1 and 2. And, I mean, we got to keep in mind, this is the dude that co-wrote The Ghetto.
That's right.
You know? I mean, he... And then he had a version of it. I mean, his version did come out on one of his albums. But yeah. Hudson 1 and 2, I mean, this is cult underground soul. Because mm-hmm. in the UK, especially... Especially in London, this stuff was getting majorly played.
He was big.
Yeah.
Love to hold you close to me. When I'm with the girl, I feel so good inside. Love to hold you close to me. When you're in my arms, I feel just so alive. Every time I look at you, my mind just starts to wander. When I'm near you, babe, I feel a roaring thunder. It may sound strange, but it's true. All I ever really want to do is to help you feel my feeling. Set you rocking in a real land. Cause baby, I love to hold you close to me. Bring me up, girl, when I'm down. Baby, I need you around. Love to hold you close to me. Girl, I like the way you do me. Send your body heat on through me. The way you give yourself to me in sweet submission. I never thought I'd find myself caught up in this condition. Make a deal, me and you. You just say that you'll be true. When I'm with you, make me feel so good inside, pretty girl. Love to hold you close to me. Since you set my soul on fire, won't you take me higher and higher? Every time I look at you, my mind just starts to wander. When I'm near you, babe, I feel a roaring thunder. I may sound strange, but it's true. All I ever really want to do.
Leroy Hudson. The genius of Leroy Hudson, Curtum Records out of Chicago. And you know, that originally didn't come on a 45, but later on, the British people liked that song so much. Love to Hold You Close. That's from Hudson 2.
That was a slick production, David. It sounded very much like an Al Jarreau record, if you listen to it.
Yeah, Al Jarreau was a fantastic singer. And it's funny how he's disappeared from the scene when he was the greatest, I mean, of all time. Mm. He could express himself without even singing. I mean, that's how beautiful he
was. Well, the thing with Al Jarreau is, I would say, is a little bit more jazz than that. And he was well loved. I mean, if you look at the Montreal Jazz Fest, the Montreal Jazz Fest, mm-hmm. But it's only the Vancouver that he didn't play so much. Yeah. But he was playing all the other big ones. I mean, he passed about a year ago now.
Mm-hmm. That's the long. That's too sad. Elgin's gone.
Yeah, he's gone. But no, Leroy Hutson, fantastic talent. But we've got kind of an obscure record next, and Jason, you say you don't remember much about this band.
No, I said I heard about
them. You heard about them.
But never heard them.
Because the Soulmates, so they must have come along basically in the late 60s in Vancouver. But it says that the guy that promoted them, that got this record out, Blackstrap Molasses, I actually never knew that this record was from Vancouver before. But you know what? On the back, Condor Music, Burnaby, British Columbia.
Wow.
So this was made here. And Johnny Kitchen is this mysterious producer, entrepreneur, L.A. guy that came up here and got this made. Strange.
You ever hear of him, Jason?
I never heard the record. I heard of them.
Yeah.
And they were around the city.
Yeah.
I was singing and working and on the road a lot. Yeah. So I never got a chance to see them.
So they got bookings with some of the places you would have played
Bit? Probably that I did that brought up the American acts.
Yeah.
And used them in Victoria, Vancouver, as well as Seattle. And it was a road. It was a route for a lot of the new musicians coming
It's interesting, around. Though, that the L.A. connection, because that would come up a few years later when your Mushroom album was mastered in L.A. Mm-hmm. So there is a connection there.
It was mastered in L.A. and recorded parts.
Yeah, well, partially recorded in L.A. Mm-hmm. We were top session musicians, but we'll get into that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But let's let the listeners hear. Here is a 1969 local soul record released right here in Vancouver.
Gotta see that.
She ever
And I have to say, right here on African Rhythms, that, I mean, we're talking, there's literally been hundreds of covers of the What's Going On. I mean, hundreds, literally. But the feeling that Weldon Irvine puts into that, the only person I could really compare it to would be Donny Hathaway.
You touched on it, man. On that, it sounded just like a collection of New York session musicians, just as we were speculating during the break and stuff. Mm. And the other song that you played, I mean, that had a Philly feel to it. It had no kind of feel even close to, you know, anything done out the West Coast. But
yeah, Vancouver Soul, the Soulmates. I mean, what happened to, we're going to have to talk to some of our friends and try to get some history on who these guys are and where they went from here. Did they ever put out anything else? 7-inch? Did they break up? We don't know anything.
Clearly, they had to play somewhere live. That's why I was asking you again, Jason. Like, you know, you never heard of these cats in passing?
He heard of them, just vaguely.
Only the name.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I never heard of the music.
Yeah, I mean, being that their promoter was from L.A., you know, it's conceivable that he put this together and tried to get some reaction or build some hype, and maybe he skipped town. Who knows? You know, I mean, we don't really know.
You
know.
Like you said, David, it's got a good feel. It's a good record, but it was a hustle record. They didn't have a major label.
Yeah,
they didn't have major production.
Burnaby, British Columbia.
Well, this goes back to where we started.
Yeah,
you got places where this music's appreciated, so you're going to have DJs playing. You're going to have people pushing the music, and it'll get that exposure. We just talked about L.A. being involved in this. L.A.'s really not a music city.
Not anymore.
Not for soul music. You know, it never really was. And when we talked about artists like Jesse James and all that from the Northern Soul and stuff, they never got that kind of exposure.
Well, let's face it. What L.A.'s good for, and I don't want to generalize here, but financing and backing up or getting a piece of the action with projects, whether that be film or music.
It's still happening as far as Quincy is concerned, but the thing about it is it has its limits. I'm sorry to say this about Los Angeles. It is now just a theater, cinema town. It is no longer a musical town. You have to go now, San Francisco, that is still alive. It's still alive. It's still happening. And then the East Coast is still the winner.
Yeah. But
Back then, let's talk about your 1975 released Mushroom Records album, because that was made here at Mushroom Studios, but yet it was mastered and finished in Los Angeles.
You know? That's true.
So it was, the connection cannot be denied. In fact, if you look on the personnel on here. Mm-hmm. We look at, you know, who played on this record. I mean, your brother, Lou Hoover.
Wonderful drummer.
He was involved. But the one notable person, Mike, is King Arison.
Yes,
you know?
King Arison.
I bet you he never set foot in Vancouver, but that was mastered in
LA. He did. He was in Mushroom. Mm. Right there. I met him.
Oh, wow.
King.
Yeah. How did he get involved?
He was still being used on the West Coast.
Incredible Bongo Band. He's on that one.
He's on
Vancouver.
Which was made at Mushroom.
That's right.
Cambase, yeah.
But the thing about it is he's still being used. If he's still alive, he's one of the greatest Kunga Bunga players that I ever met. Plus, he had personality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's notable that he was involved.
Yes.
But he came
up here to do it.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that. I was thinking maybe it was mastered in L.A.
It was mastered in L.A., but the tracks.
But I figured maybe they did some of the overdubs there, is what I was thinking.
Yes.
But this track, which came out as a 45, I believe it was the third or fourth 45 off the album, but Sing With Soul, tell us about this. It's got a spoken intro.
What a song. Yeah. We had the guy that plays Elvis Presley's bass player, which is really something that I'll always remember. I always thought that this man made a lot of the rock and roll scenes without being there. I mean, people were copying him. Everybody was on to Elvis Presley. Myself, being from Edmonton, that's all I got was Elvis Presley. The guys that did Tequila, you know, and all those kind of things. I got hardly any soul. Any soul that I got was from my uncles or the...
But about the song. So it says here that it was written by Tim Goss. Is that his name? Tim Gross?
I wrote the song.
But I mean,
he wrote the feel. Okay.
Yeah.
Doom doom.
Right.
Doom doom.
Because I mean, although it doesn't say so here,
no,
it seems like it's your improvised lyrics, right?
Yeah.
I mean, who else would have come up with that commentary you made in it?
Yeah. Just me, man.
Yeah, but then why did they not mention that?
Yeah. Listen, it's all about money.
Yeah.
It's all about money, and it ain't damn thing funny. The thing about it is, I was suppressed. I had an album out, and I couldn't even advertise it. They had full control where it went. They lied to me. They said it was only released.
Okay, but
in
let's
Canada.
Let's the listeners listen to it now, just so they can see this improvised lyrics that you provide.
All right.
When I was a young man, I was raised in the Lower East Side of this city, and I learned many things. You could say I got my schooling here, understand? You see, I used to work at my daddy's bar, dig? And here is where I learned the most important thing. So, you know what I mean? Soul Jack. Daddy's bar wasn't much, but it was very, very funky. Now let me tell you about it. I can remember it just like yesterday, when Georgia Sam, the local man, pulled up in his long, long pink Cadillac. And sometimes he would bring in a couple of girls he'd been working late that night. The soulful women, the women who knows how to love because they make their living at it. When these girls was feeling down, they go out to the back room and start clapping their hands and singing, carrying on. And I thought, now what kind of a song could make these women happy when they were feeling so blue? So one night I went out to the back room and I asked one of the girls. She just looked at me and said, son, it don't matter what you sing as long as you sing with soul. Lesson I've never forgotten, and a feeling I carry with me all the time, cause it's a cold, wicked world we live in, and you know how it feels when things ain't going for the best, and the blues done got you down. So when I feel myself in this situation, I think what these soulful women taught me, and that was,
and that's the big local soul legend, Jason Hoover, who we're doing, we've got a special guest on the show again tonight. This was back in 1975 that he released this album. Pretty much the top soul funk record ever released out of Vancouver. And is that is that the Hart guitar player on this one?
I think so. I believe so. And what I'm trying to remember his name now. He was Hart, the Hart of Hart. It was the Hart of
Hart's guitar player.
Yeah,
yeah, no, we can find out. It's right on the record.
He played it.
Yeah, he played on that song. Yeah. Right. So, because I mean, he's on the next one. He's on Show Me Some Slack too.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed writing that. It was should have been called Cut Me Some Slack.
So that was Howard Leese on guitar.
Howard Leese, Hart's guitar player. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, what happens after this Mushroom locally released record came out, shortly after that, Dreamboat Annie Hart came out, same label, and blew up, right?
Let me tell you this story really quickly, very quickly. I was the only one signed to Mushroom Records, okay?
Well, that's not true, because Paul Horn was on
Paul Horn record. Was the first. I'm talking about as a group or vocalist. Now, Paul Horn did not sing. He played saxophone.
He had vocals on some of his records, though.
Yeah, but he hired vocalists.
Yeah.
But the thing is, all the stuff of Paul Horn was not all recorded here in Vancouver. He had
some of it was. I looked at some of it, and it was recorded.
Look it up,
here.
And you'll also see that he has had other releases.
He lived on the island, so some of it was recorded
that's
there.
That's right.
Yeah. But no, Paul Horn was kind of a local pioneer, and he was on Mushroom Records. But basically, when that Hart record hits, that must have been bittersweet for you.
Well, I knew I was out. I knew that I was out because I had, when you walked the Mushroom Records, big, huge picture of me that sat there for nearly, almost two years. Mm. And I was their top act. I was what they were pushing.
But how long until Dreamboat Annie came out? It's got to have been within a year of
it
your
was,
record.
It was about 15 months I was famous in Mushroom. And you walk in, it was all of me, right?
And then Dreamboat Annie hit.
Did it hit?
Did it ever hit?
I mean,
that's one of the biggest selling rock records now. I mean, it's huge.
That's right. Yeah. And then the thing was, I was knocked out. I was knocked out because they were going to a different direction.
Yeah.
Now, they expected after the album here, the Apple album on Mushroom of my record, they expected big things to happen. Well, the guy that was promoting it, he died of a brain hemorrhage. I guess he was doing too much cocaine.
Jeez.
But he was a wonderful promoter.
Yeah. But let's face it, I mean, the album netted at least four singles. You know, Sing Me Some Soul was the third or fourth single, right?
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. It was. I mean, although the next track we're going to listen to, Show Me Some Slack, although it became a cult international track, it never was released as a single, but they did put four, and that is quite a few. And some of that stuff must have been played on the radio at times.
Oh, the radio announcers here in Vancouver are so wonderful for me. And a lot of people don't play Homeboy.
Yeah.
And no matter where you are.
But see, the question to ask then is, after Hart busted wide with Dreamboat Annie like they did, they would have had money in the budget to push you as well. That's the question, why didn't they do it? Mm. Especially when for 15 months it looked like that's exactly where they were going to go.
That's right. You got that down. Yeah, you must have the history on it. The thing about it is there was also conflict with the guy that was pushing my record. But he was not really pushing my record. It was just one of the things they would throw down along with Dreamboat Annie. Okay, but at one time he had to push me, and he was, I'm trying to think of his name. He was from Montreal, went to Toronto, and then he became really big.
Gino Vanelli?
Huh?
No, not Gino Vanelli.
Gino was from Montreal. Gino was from Montreal.
Gino is from Montreal.
He was big back then.
Yep.
Yeah, he was beautiful too. He had the girls, they melted through the panties and everything. He was fantastic, as far as I'm concerned. Mm. I got all three of his albums. Mm-hmm. You know, I know he's made more.
Well, he's got many more. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But getting back to the Mushroom album, so Show Me Some Slack. Mm-hmm. How did the song come about?
That's all I have. Okay.
Tim. It says Tim. Tim Gross. You co-wrote "Show Me Some Slack" with Dennis Green.
That's right. Dennis Green is still playing. He's a pioneer now.
What does he play?
He plays guitar, all of them, man, and plays bass as well.
So he wrote those guitar lines that the Hart guitar player
did. That's what I was telling you.
Mm-hmm. So how did it come up? Well, what were your influences with Show Me Some Slack?
There was no influences. I heard what Dennis was trying to do. We were in my living room, and I said, well, listen, man, why don't we call this song Show Me Some Slack, I said. And Dennis says, that sounds really tough. So we worked it, and I wrote it. I get the feeling, baby, in my living room, every single day.
Yeah.
You're demanding more attention.
Was it about a situation? Was it about a real life situation?
No, it just made up. I made it up.
Yeah.
I just said
it sounds sincere.
Yeah, it sounds like it really is a story. A lot of people ask me that very same question. Dave, how many years now? This is at least 1975. Yeah. That's how long people were asking me. What are you talking about? Who is that real?
Yeah.
You know, and hey, I'm just happy to get recognized, you know. I mean, the DJs in Vancouver, I'm talking about when they were called CKLG and C-Fun, they love me, and they played me all the time. It was really nice to be driving home and hear your record and go to the other station.
Were you complimented, though, like to meeting me later on, and we've done a bit of radio.
Oh,
complimented the me and other international guys like the Show Me Some Slack track?
Yeah.
Because they even made a homemade video for it on YouTube, so that shows the love for that song.
Yeah.
All right, well, listeners, let's check this out next. This is from the 1975 album, and this is a underground cult soul worldwide hit.
This.
Show Me Some Slack.
Are you doing good? Are you getting what you need?
Locally made, locally written, locally produced, and mastered in L.A., and should have been a huge song. But Show Me Some Slack, one of the finest moments of Jason's 1975 LP.
It was. During the time of Tower of Power is when I was influence on that song. You know? We had our horns. We had everybody. Lenny Williams. I had to take that part, man, and I just tried to stretch it out and get in the same vein as Tower of Power.
Yeah, no, it's it's a sophisticated arrangement, am I?
Very sophisticated. That's not rock chords you're listening to. Those are jazz chords.
Those are jazz chords. Seventh upon,
those are jazz chords. Sevenths, eighths, and ninths. Yeah, those are jazz chords. There's no question about it.
The ninths are usually jazz chords.
Called. Yep.
Yeah, no, that's a really special song. To me, I hear little hints of my love for Willie Hutch, in the vocalizing, the nuances. Yeah.
How did you grab that out of there? Yeah. Wow. He was wonderful. He was a great influence on me.
Very versatile.
So maybe that's what you're hearing is a lot.
Well, of course, I think that every piece of art, there's echoes of others. But, I mean, it's only an echo. It's still all you.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's pretty special. But we got an interesting, we're going to just take a little break from your music for a sec.
Sure.
And listen to this Lynn Christopher. Now, here is somebody, she just had a one-off album in the 70s. But before they were famous, who's doing the production? It's a couple of members of KISS, I think, are on here, which is kind of interesting. Wow. So it's, the track we're going to listen to is Take Me With You. But, I'm looking through the credits here, and Paul Stanley from KISS is on this. Sure about Gene Simmons.
Gene Simmons is on there. He's on there, too.
He's on there, too. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a Rare Groove classic, but it's an obscure singer. So let's check this out next here on African Rhythms on CITR 101.9 FM. Coming up at the top of the hour is Skulls Hall Talk Radio. Stick around.
Take me with you. I wonder how long it's been since they've kissed.
No love in the room.
Once before, not long ago, it was here to see. Tell me what's been happening to our family. There's no love in the room. It's almost empty. There's no love in the room. Oh, God, we don't have any. There's no love in the room. Oh, what can I do? There's no love in the room. No love in the room.
Sister's in a hurry to go out and play. It's written in her eyes, she feels the same way.
No love in the room.
Dinner's almost over, there hasn't been a word.
The ticking of the clock's the only sound I've heard.
No love in the room.
Try.
'Cause I just can't sit back and watch our family die. There's no love in the room. It's almost empty. There's
no love in the room. Oh God, we don't have any. There's no love in the room.
It's almost empty. There's
no love in the room.
And that is the fifth dimension. Takes you back, eh, Mike? You know, those guys were quality, classy soul.
You know what they remind me of? They remind me of a group version of Jackie Wilson. Because you remember all of those Brunswick productions he did?
Yeah.
He was always dabbling in opera lyrics and things of that nature. Yeah. And the productions were always kind of taking away from his soul rather than augmenting it. And I think the fifth dimension very much that same way.
Yeah.
Every now and then, like in One Less Bell to Answer, you feel like Marilyn McCoo is like, she can go there, right? And, you know, when they do the Aquarius part and the brother gets down, they're going there. But they really had a style and they wanted to keep them in a certain place. So that's why they did
it.
It wouldn't be.
It's not surprising that Fifth Dimension, I mean, this is a song that British people have picked up on, but it's not surprising that they would have some classy songs that got a little bit hidden, because I think that, you know, these acts were pushing out all kinds of polished material.
Sure.
And like we were saying about A&Rs not always picking the right ones, and that would be an example. And then before that, Lynn Christopher, that was early days for Gene Simmons, Paul Stanley from Kiss, 1973. So here she does. She creates a rare groove classic without even knowing it.
That was a nice track. And you could clearly hear Sharon Redd's vocals in the midst of the...
Yeah, Sharon Redd on background vocals.
Yep, yeah, she was on background, and
And then two members of Kiss involved in a rare groove classic. And I was telling these folks that Lynn Christopher, she's seen, being that my playlists are online, she saw that I'd played her track before. She added me to Facebook and offered her services to talk about it sometime.
Get down, Lynn. That's right. We're here for the cause. I like that.
Awesome. Well, all right. Well, we... next, we're going to go gospel, because here's this new gentleman, Greg Belson, and he's a gospel DJ, just played at Glastonbury doing a UK tour. But this gentleman discovers unknown gospel, and let's just see if we can find this record.
Digging through as we speak. There we go.
Yeah, so it's Divine Disco, and it's disco between 74 and 84. And I've played this track before, Mike, but you know how I love to go to church.
Hello.
And I believe, this one is Herman Harris and the Voices of Faith, Hope, and Love. How about that for a name?
That's nice. That's very nice. I like that. Who wrote that?
I don't know who wrote it, but the track is called Give Yourself to Jesus.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I've done that years ago, man.
Yeah. All right, let's go to church. Cool. Now that's the real deal right there. That's the gospel, and let's repeat their name: the Voices of Faith, Hope, and Love. How about that?
Well, I think that's fantastic. Being a writer, I know that is a scoop, as well as the name of that last song you played. I gave myself to Jesus. I mean, that's tough.
Kind of misleading that the title would be Divine Disco. That don't sound like disco at all.
That's the most non-disco track on the album, which is the one I like the most, of course.
But. It sounded good. You picked a good one.
Yeah. No. Give Yourself to Jesus. Yeah. I mean, you sang five-part harmony?
Oh, man. That scares me when people talk about five-part harmony, David, because it's the ultimate.
The woman who gets to take the lead, that's quite a job, eh? You know, for her to just go and improv on top like that.
She's spiraling. You can't do that in five-part harmony. No. Only the lead singer can do that. It doesn't matter, male or female, only the lead singer is allowed to do that. Everybody, even if they get in the feeling, they got to stay in their lane because they don't, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work, exactly. Mm-hmm. But like I said, it's really tough on the fifth part to sing natural voice. And anytime you can sing natural voice, a person like Chaka Khan that gets up and arranges it, you get, wow. You know? Yeah. And she is nobody's talked about it here recently.
Chaka Khan's incredible.
She's still my favorite singer.
She
is. Outside of Aretha. But it's talking about the range and the rhythm and the phrasing.
Mm-hmm.
She's got it. She's a champion. She's
no question.
Champion. Yeah. No, well, I mean, that's that gospel vocal on that last track. I mean, I love moments of pure inspiration like that. But, you know, one track, getting back to your Mushroom album, but one track we should talk about, She's My Lady. Tell me about that song.
Well, this is what happens, okay? You have to have something, you have to have a something that people want to hear again. That's what I was taught. And oops, in order to have a creative song that you know you want to be a winner, you have to have something in it. She's My Lady was the choice after Love Will Get You. Now, Love Will Get You played right across Canada and played in Halifax and everywhere.
But She's My Lady, you were still doing it.
That's
you were
right.
still doing it in 86 because it's live on Toronto TV on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're still playing it. But I'm saying, She's My Lady, I got ripped off from the Mushroom label.
Yeah. From royalties?
They told me, listen, Dave, they told me that it wasn't released in the States.
Mm.
Unfortunately, I have friends. I was down there visiting in Los Angeles, just went into the record store and said, geez, I'm going to look under GH. Sure enough, my fucking...
The 45? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it was the album.
The album,
they had.
Yeah.
Okay, now the next store right there on not Hollywood Boulevard, the one down below it, I can't remember.
Pico?
What's it called?
Pico?
No, that's not it. You're on Hollywood Boulevard, and it turns into... Anyways, if you're down on Hollywood, you know you remember them. Not
Tower really. Records.
Mm-hmm.
Tower Records, right there. Go. Now, I was not told about this. They said they hadn't released it, but I was down there. And I'm looking. My buddy Donnie Girard and I are looking.
And you have a big display
you
of
see,
your record.
They, I told you that. The big display and records out here. And a big... They had that whole thing on a poster, big like that, like me. I said, wow, I can't believe this. Tower Records is happening, and I've got a bunch of liars and cheats in my corner.
So for one moment, they were promoting it, and then all of a sudden, the bottom dropped out as the Dreamboat Annie took off, it seems.
Not only that.
But anyway, why don't we...
There was strife. I was not happy.
Yeah. Well, why don't we check it out now, She's My Lady, because this, if people look up on YouTube, Jason Hoover is live from an 86 gig TV show that he did in Toronto. They recorded She's My Lady, and that is 11 years after the record was released, but yet you were still doing it live, and it's quite a good funky live version, but let's check out the original
from the Mushroom.
Hot. Yeah. All right.
Another dime, so I can live a better life of luxury. Though the going is tough, still I try to get enough, and it makes me feel so good to know she believes in me. She's my lady, a lovely lady, my sexy baby. She's good to me, and I love her, you know I love her, she always touches me so tenderly. Oh, I'm never, ever gonna mistreat her, I don't wanna do a thing to chase her love away, and she makes it. Each and every day, she's my lady, lovely lady. I love my lady, she's good to me.
and she makes it. Oh, she makes it so much better.
Each and every day.
She's my lady, a funky lady, my sexy baby. She's good to me. She's my lady, foxy lady, my pretty baby. She's good to me. Oh, I love her. Oh, you know I love her. She always loves me so tenderly.
And that's one of the four singles off the Mushroom album, She's My Lady, and one of the most lasting songs. Is that, yet again, Hart's guitar player on that one?
No, that was Dennis Green, one of the finest unknown guitar players in Canada. He's doing his
own
thing.
So that's not Hart's guitar player that's on the other songs?
No, and Love Will Get You, I do believe it's only... He played on two.
Oh, I see.
He only played on two. Dennis Green's named right up there for being in all the songs.
Howard Lees is the other guy.
Yeah. Howard Lees is the other guy. Dennis Green, we loved him. He was great. He's just...
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just saying about Dennis Green, you know, he's the unknown championship bout guitar player that I've ever worked with, including Harmata. Harmata was fantastic.
You'd like to have had Jimmy on that album, actually.
Yeah, I wanted Jimmy on an album. We had a little dispute.
Yeah.
And he said he wasn't interested because he had heard from other people that I was using another guitar. I've never used anybody else.
You respected Jimmy Harmata.
Oh, yeah. But we
have. And you know, you guys have had your, like any band members, you've had your ups and downs over the years. But we're going to reunite all you guys when we do our shoots.
That'll
and
be nice.
We're going to let bygones be bygones.
Yeah,
and we're going to move forward because Jimmy Harmata and yourself, of course, wrote King Size, one of the most monumental local tracks ever made on the R&B scene, and that would go back to 68. And
69.
Jimmy was also part of other songs that you wrote, like Rhythm Is the Way, possibly.
Rhythm Is the Way.
Yeah.
We Are All People.
We Are All People.
I like that.
Well, no, actually, We Are All People, he didn't co-write. That was somebody else. That was an organ player, and that was not Jimmy. Not that one.
By the way, no.
No, he didn't do that one. He didn't do that one.
It wasn't there?
Jimmy Harmata did not co-write that one.
Okay.
No.
But it was Kenny Wayne.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently it was a different keyboard player, right?
Yeah,
who wrote that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Mushroom record, it was a lifetime achievement for you, though.
Well, let me tell you, it was really nice to have an album out after
finally got to
many
make your
songs.
Soul funk album.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm saying that's what I was doing. I was doing like Rust to Dust, Rhythm Is the Way, We Are All People, and there's other tunes.
But that was your psych rock period.
That's right.
And the Soul funk album, which is the Mushroom album, came after that.
Yeah.
And you were no longer working with the same musicians. There was no longer Bob Kidd, Jimmy Harmata, any of those people.
It was a step,
but
was a step up.
But they were really good musicians. I mean, King Erickson, internationally regarded funk percussionist.
A year after that album was produced, he did his own single album. That was the
great
disco era, and he was doing stuff for CJ and Company and other folks in the States.
We were lucky here in Vancouver to have him. But I didn't even realize that he was residing here locally. I always presumed that was done in LA.
Mm-hmm. But the last licks on She's My Lady, the reason that works, I can imagine, in this format, in this area, is because it is a rock ballad. I mean,
it's a funk ballad.
It's rock tinged, and because of that, that gave them an excuse to play it.
Yeah.
No, I'm not trying to be funny.
That was crossover.
That's definitely crossover action.
That crossover taste, but not big.
Right.
Yeah.
It did in Canada, but I'm saying I wanted it to have a hit in Los Angeles. It was played on I forget the name of the station, but it's a very, very famous station.
I'll say this. For the market, if that had been played back east, it was similar to what the Isley Brothers were going through in their 3+3 period when Ernie took over and whatnot, and Jimmy taught Ernie, so all of that stuff, all of that influence was coming out.
Lots of guitar, exactly, like the Isley Brothers.
Yeah, I like the Isley Brothers, and actually, we thought of the Isley Brothers before we actually... Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
I was in the studio watching Michael turn it down. Before we went into the studio, he said, let's just sit a minute.
Everybody was listening to the Isley Brothers. They were everywhere.
And then he played the record, and he says, is this what
three
you want?
Plus
is
three.
Is this what kind of sound you want?
Yeah.
I says, man, you're right on it, Mike. I don't believe that you know that that's what I want.
Who's That Lady? Highways of My Life and Harvest for the World.
Actually, she do show in Isley's, but the Isley's are never going to die. I mean, they have these seven guys.
The way they had the Jimi Hendrix kind of guitar combined
with the guitar. Played with Jimmy. That was his rhythm guitar player, man.
That guy was
good.
Check
it out. Yeah, check it out. Really Isley was Jasper Isley.
All right. Well, we're going to have to bring this particular show to an end with Jason Hoover and Michael Ingram. But the last thing that we're going to talk about is over a year ago now is the sad passing of David Bowie. And we're going to go out with one of his funkiest track, Stay, which strangely, even though I was a big Bowie fan, I never heard or got into the song, even though I had Station to Station album and I was well into Young Americans and well into his exposure for me for black music. But Bowie had the funk. Bowie went on TV and he had the respect.
Yes,
he had he had the respect of the black community, and he had the funk, truly.
He did. He put them in check when he said straight up, how come you guys are not playing the black artists on MTV?
I know, he
in
was very
early
upfront.
MTV, he was very upfront about it, and we always dug him, but the fact that he did Soul Train and all the other shows and whatnot, he even hesitated. He wanted to be there, and that's a big difference from a lot of the wannabes, like, say, a Wild Cherry, that had one song and really didn't, they weren't sincere about what they were playing, and that makes a big difference. We loved Bowie.
I mean, I think that, like with Young Americans, like for him to have such devastatingly soulful backup singers like he did,
even just to
have the gall like to put his vocals above those, he had to come up with something pretty good. And I think in the end, but I realize now that, Golden Years, Stay, and these other songs, he really showed how he could embed funk into the rock mainstream. Like, without any compromise, I mean, he really had the best people he worked with.
I love the Bowie. If you hear him and Luther Vandross doing that harmonizing on Young Americans, you'll say, okay, I haven't heard this before.
Got to dance on the field in BC Place when David Bowie opened up BC Place. It had just been built, and 50,000 people came out. It was right after Scary Monsters, it was a couple year or two after that got released, so early 80s. And man, what a gig. And then me and my Bowie fanatic friends from Calgary, I worked in the record store, and they came out, and man, we were dancing to Young Americans on the field in BC Place, and it was like a top Vancouver moment, I would say.
They had the camera, they had the big screen, so you see him do it.
Oh man, there were so many people there. Bowie looked out at the crowd, he's like, there's so many of you out there, but I'm really digging you guys because everybody was dancing. 50,000 people in unhip Vancouver dancing.
It
was amazing.
A beautiful stadium, man. If everybody was dancing, I mean, it must have been great.
It wasn't an ideal place for a gig, but man, we made it ideal because, I mean, this was David Bowie, and he was at... That was really, I mean, arguably towards the end of one hell of a period he had, of 10, 12... or more years of just putting out, no matter what he touched, he went Berlin Trilogy, he went Brian Eno, he went Iggy Pop, no matter what he did,
Was
gold.
He did the movie, Absolute Beginners. If you pick it up, if you watch it, that was all him, and it's a classic now.
Bowie is a great actor. Yeah. I mean, he was a really good actor.
It really makes me upset that he's gone, because I was just getting into it. Like, I listened to Fame, out of the blue, put it on my record.
So good. So funky. All right. Well, listen, we got to end it there, but, we're going to be back. So, Mike, take it out, my brother.
Well, whether you are in Victoria, downtown East Side, where I used to live and love, or out here by the University of beautiful British Columbia, if you want to know where the soul trees grow, the roots can be found right here on African Rhythms.
Peace and love to you, Jason Hoover.
All right. Thank you, guys.